The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. The Minister at the Department of Infrastructure is on today. If you want to get in touch, call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. And you can email studio at manxradio.com. Michelle Haywood, a Russian MHK, in the job since the back end of last year. And of course, DOI is an enormous department. And it's fair to say, it's never much out of the news. So, Faster Mike, good afternoon. Michelle Haywood.
Good afternoon, Andy.
Good to see you. So, I understand you have some news.
I do indeed have some news, and you'll be the first to hear it today. The press release will be going out this afternoon, but we are announcing a new bus service that supplements our network that we've been working on for some time. We did a review last year and there was a consultation went out and there was an increasing demand for a bus service that linked Peel to the airport and down to the south. And we are just in the process now of applying to the RTLC for a licence to run that service. And I'm hopeful that the new service will kick in just as we get into the summer holidays. So sometime next month that we'll be able to get that service up and running.
Okay, that's Peel to the airport.
Peel through Foxtel to the airport, and then from the airport down to south, connecting the two ports, Port Erin and Port St Mary, connecting Craigneish and connecting the Sound.
Okay. How have your consultations gone at the sea terminal?
The consultations on the 20s?
Yeah.
They've been reasonably well attended. I think there are times there where we've almost had people queuing up to talk to us. And we've had some really good conversations with people. We've been able to talk through some of their challenges and to try and help people understand that the consultation is just that. There's a set of proposals at the moment.
Right.
Nothing is set in stone. And on those proposals, you know, we're asking people for individual roads and to discuss whether they think that the grading is right or wrong on the roads in the proposals that we've put forward.
Okay. Some people think that this is racing ahead and that you've got the cart before the horse. So it's purely a set of consultations and proposals.
Tim Ward supported all the actions in the implementation plan that we put forward in May. That was quite clear that we were going to go out and consult with each local authority area, each region first. We were going to talk to people about what they liked or didn't like about the proposals. And I was challenged, actually, I think last week about, well, why didn't you just ask a solicitor of the roads we do want it on? And I was like, well, it's not meant to be a memory game. You know, if somebody said to me, list out all the roads in your constituency, I'd probably get 75% of them if I thought about it for long enough. That's a daft way round of doing it. It's much easier to stick a proposal on the table and consult on that. So those maps that we've published, they're the proposals. There are recommendations for what roads we think would benefit from a lower speed. And the consultation is to test that out with people and say, do these roads feel right to you? Can you think of reasons why we shouldn't include some of these roads?
This has been going on for quite a while, hasn't it? I mean, it was started
This has been
years
rumbling,
ago.
Yeah. It goes way back to 2018 and the active travel strategy, and then 2020 and the first Tim Ward vote on it. 2023, the next Tim will vote on it. It's been pushing on for years. And you know, the initial schemes were really expensive, highly engineered schemes. And this is the starting point. This is the lowest, you know, cost option, the most cost-effective option that we could pursue. And I think it's absolutely right that it's the local consultation element that kicks in, because what we really, really need is that local knowledge and that local understanding about how people move around our streets to inform whether, you know, we've applied a fairly sort of engineering set of criteria to the roads. It's based on density of housing, but we don't know if some of those houses are used as nursery buildings or whatever, you know, where there'd be extra risk factors around there. So getting local knowledge is really important at this stage.
So what's the priority? What's the aim behind reducing some roads to 20 miles per hour?
The main aim is about improving the quality of life for people who live there. And we know, because we've been doing it now with residential estates for the last 25 to 30 years, every single new estate that's gone up has been 20 miles an hour. There's been no question about it. We know that those slower speeds make people feel safer and happier in their streets. It reduces road noise. It means that parents feel more confident about letting their children walk to school because you know that the traffic's not zooming past quite so fast. And of course, there is a safety element to that because we all know that slower speeds are safer. You know, speed kills and higher speeds kill more easily.
There are plenty of people, who knows whether it's the majority or the minority, but plenty of people think it's a bad idea. What is it that you think that they don't understand or have got wrong?
I've been challenging people over this. So somebody said to me, "Well, you should just have a referendum." And a referendum would be a yes or a no. Yes, do I support these or no? And I don't think, I look at those maps and some of the roads that have been picked up when we've used our set of criteria, I think, I'm not sure that does pass the scratch test with me. It feels like that road would be too slow and that perhaps the risk factors aren't there to justify it being 20 rather than 30. And so I kind of start at that. I'm not quite a yes. And then at the other end, when people are saying to me, no, we don't want this, it turns out that they don't want me to take away the 127 miles of road. I've already got a 20 miles an hour, which is mostly around our residential estates anyway. They don't want me to take away 20s around schools. They do want me to include schools that don't have 20s around them already. There is some consideration around where nurseries are placed and care homes are placed and people who are more vulnerable, and about routes to school as well. So actually, I think we're all somewhere in the middle. It's just a question of how much we want to do. And that's why the consultation is so important, because it's that how much do people feel comfortable with in their community having these speeds reduced?
OK, let's get to the lines. And Bonzo's first with us today. Hi, Bonzo. You're live with Michelle Haywood.
Hello, Andy, and hello, Michelle. And Michelle, first off, many congratulations about this bus route from Peel to All Points deeply south. Is it going to be an hourly service at all?
Yes, there are two buses that are going to be running the route. So it'll be running between the school services during the daytimes initially. The buses are timed out to end up in Port Erin as the steam train comes in. Almost an integrated travel policy going on here, I think. So it's time to meet that demand. And I know, and I'm sure the supporters of Russian Heritage Trust down south who've been organising themselves to try and support getting a service back there and been telling us that people arrive on the steam trains intending to make their way down to the Sound. They will be, I hope, absolutely delighted that we've managed to incorporate into a wider increase in service. We've managed to incorporate their desire, and so it will run all year round, and it will run, it's a daytime service initially. We will of course be reviewing it and seeing, and so my challenge is use it or lose it. All of our bus services are always under review to make sure that we're being as efficient as we can. So I'm well, hopeful that people will take this one up.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that the Air and Arts Centre and Peel Centenary Centre, I think in particular, will be most encouraged by that, and hope that you perhaps can make some arrangements for the evenings.
Yeah, well, what I'm hoping for this route is that, we can show that there is sustained demand. I think it meets some of the needs, and it's a kind of almost an incidental one, that we're already moving children between Castle Rushen High School and QE2 because some of the A-level courses, particularly where numbers are low, are co-taught between the schools. And so there have been some challenges over providing that transport for children. And actually the first services in the morning will get children across to the corresponding high school in time for the first lesson and things. So I'm hopeful that, that becomes part of the routine day traffic on this. But I'd love to see that this service really gets some take up and that we pick up an evening thing. The delights of being able to go up for a drink in the creek and get home would be great for me.
It's a pity it isn't on tomorrow, so that we can't all come over to Peel and watch you with your pirate crew.
I don't think that's a pity. I don't have high hopes for our chances. I think we're just hoping that we don't sink or come last, and that's about my aspirations for tomorrow.
But the main point that I was phoning about was about the 20 limit. And I'm doing a bit of the old Fox News fair and balanced here, because I think there's very much of a position that it's bad. The Department of Infrastructure are coming to take over the local authorities, and it's all part of the United Nations World New Order thought police thing or something. When, of course, the scheme that you are implementing now is very much the light, no sugar scheme. isn't it? Rather than the one that you were originally recommended, which was the full fat, change all the junctions, put speed humps everywhere, putting kitchen sinks coated with gold and things.
That's absolutely so, true. The initial scheme, you know, at the time was costed at just under $3 million, and I suspect would be significantly more now because we are 5 years on from that costing being done. Treasury said, no, that's it's just not going to happen. There are other priorities. And so the department has done the light touch. And I have said to Mrs. Corlett, obviously moved this motion twice. And I feel slightly that, you know, I owe an apology that we can't necessarily do more. But the intention with this is that we've seen, and there is really good evidence that shows that signage-only schemes work. They're a cost-effective way of reducing speed. And after we've got the signs up, we can monitor what happens. And if we've still got problematic areas, then we can look to do the engineering so that, you know, the speed naturally calms. And we've got experience of doing that in Port Sodrick, for example, up at St Mark's, you know, where just nobody liked the planters when they went in, but they've had a significant and measurable impact on road speeds and the accidents that occur around there. So we do have options on what we can do, and we'll work forward.
So remind me, the light version, how much is that? Is that $500,000 or a bit more?
The initial estimate for the signage spending was about $200,000. And then Mr. Thomas asked a question about how much officer time had gone. And obviously with all of the island's residential roads to assess and all of the maps to draw, you know, the officer time and the staff time added another $200,000 to that budget. It's probably been pushed up more now because, as you'll know, I decided that the what was set out in statute in terms of consultation, which is we'll publish it in the Courier for 2 weeks and invite some emails, was wholly not going to satisfy what we needed in the way of public consultation. And we're now in a programme of consulting right the way up till Christmas, rolling around the island trying to do that. So that will push up some of my department costs into this project. But the signage itself, probably total, is about $350,000, I think, overall, depending on where we end up having to put signs.
So essentially what you're doing is that you're trying to implement a lot of the project and you're spending a tenth of what the department initially recommended that you do.
Yeah, it is a really cost-effective way of trying to make changes. And of course, part of this is about education as well and changing the culture that says speeding past people's houses at 30 miles an hour. And we know nobody really sticks to 30, so they'll be doing 34, 35. Some of them will be doing over 40. And it's shifting that culture away. And it's the same as we shifted culture in terms of putting seatbelts on and drink driving. And you'll see that cultural shift will occur over a while. And I think all of the commentary and all of the headlines and all of the articles around this really serve the purpose of trying to educate people. And I don't need everyone to want to drive at 20 miles an hour. I need the person at the front of that traffic queue driving at 20 miles an hour, and the others will be following on behind. And so it does become self-enforcing.
And of course you've saved the taxpayer £4.5 million.
Yeah, somewhere in that region, probably. Yeah, I haven't done the engineer bit. That's not to say that we won't need to do some of those engineering solutions, but they will be worked out on a street-by-street basis when we know that we have areas that we're still concerned about high speeds.
Well, I'm very glad to hear that your control of the department is becoming more and more evidently effective.
Okay, all right, Bonzo. Good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Okay, cheers then. Bye.
12:20. This is so. Where are we? And again, I'll ask you to restate this umpteen times, which you may get sick of. Where are we at the moment? How far are we away from this actually happening? What processes have to happen?
So at the moment, we're in the middle of consulting over Douglas and Onchan proposals. So I've been to visit the local authorities for both. We've talked them through it. We've talked through the challenges and everything that's happened. We've run the drop-in sessions, and we've got the portal is open so that everyone can click on the roads and make comments. That process closes next Friday, the 4th of July. So, you know, you might have missed the drop-in sessions, but the portal is open there right up until that date.
OK. John, a retired civil and highway engineer in Port Erin, just says, the DOI has jumped the gun by having already imposed 20 miles per hour limit in Port St Mary and erecting poles around Douglas before carrying out without the meaningful consultation with the public? And seriously, has the Chief Constable been formally consulted? Because the Road Traffic Act 1985 states the speed limit in relation to any road in a town district or village district shall be 30 miles per hour. The Department of Infrastructure may, after consultation with the Chief Constable, by order increase, reduce or abolish the speed limit specified as the speed limit imposed in relation to any road or town district or village district. John asks, has the DOI consulted the Chief Constable on each and every section of road which the DOI wishes to restrict 20 miles per hour? What's the result of the consultation? And when does the Minister intend to make public the result of the legally required consultation with the Chief Constable?
OK, well, let's start bit by bit on that. So Portsmouth Mary scheme is in place. It was published for consultation in January. It went through the statutory process in accordance with the regulations, and there we are. Portsmouth Mary will be coming up for review. So as we move around doing the consultations around the island, when we get down to the south, we'll be consulting with Castletown, Port Erin, Colby, Arbury and Rushen residents, and talking to them about what they want, and we'll be talking to Portsmouth Mary about what's working well, what isn't, what are the challenges, what changes might be need to made, and we will be doing our review kind of collection of data there. With regards to the Chief Constable, yes, I have met the Chief Constable. We met in early April. The Chief Constable, one of his inspectors who's a member of the Road Safety Partnership, myself and an officer went up to meet with him. We discussed a number of road things and we discussed the proposals. I agree with the Chief Constable's summary that these speed restrictions are unlikely to change the number of killed or seriously injured on our roads, because most of those accidents happen on high speed roads, several of them on the mountain. And in fact, I can name the three bends on the mountain where that's the effect. And that's where we can clearly demonstrate that speed is an issue. What is the evidence from everywhere else where this has been done, and there is a growing level of evidence from a variety of settings across the UK, and I'll use the UK as a benchmark because the highway code is broadly similar to ours, the vehicles are similar to ours, and the human bodies are just as frail, is that we know it reduces the number of collisions altogether, and it reduces the severity of those collisions, and so we can expect to see those. So I agree with the Chief Constable, we're not likely to see that top end. And that's his priority, because it's one of the things he's charged with doing is reducing killed and seriously injured on the roads. But we are likely to see the bottom end of the slight injuries and the collisions being reduced as a consequence. And so that's really good news for everyone. You know, it's right down to the, if you're unlikely to be hit by a car, and if you are, the injury is going to be less, to you're unlikely to have your wing mirror knocked off because the cars were going past more slowly and had time to avoid you. So I'd like to reassure John, I have indeed spoken to the Chief Constable. We are just in the process now of publishing a website. I think I've seen the final draft has been sent through to me this morning. We'll be publishing a website, and we will have the notes of all the meetings that we've carried out over this will all be up on there, because I've taken the approach that if any document is FOIable, then we should just publish it anyway. I intend to be so open and transparent about what we did, and we will be putting those notes up. So the legal facet of consulting the Chief Constable has indeed happened.
Okay. Does the Chief Constable anticipate a rise in convictions and people being pulled for going over 20?
The Chief Constable's been quite clear about he only has a limited resource to put around speed enforcement, and that they will do that on a risk basis. So if they have, particularly if they have reports of speeding past schools where there are greater numbers of pedestrians at risk, then that's what he'll target to do as and when resources allow. The department's been quite clear about we're not relying on the fact that there's somebody stood there in a high-vis jacket with a speed count to catch people. What we will do is we will start to change the roads to enforce that slower speed, because those changes to the highway will mean that that slower speed is in play all of the time, not just when there's somebody deployed to stand down there.
Okay. Will there be, are you anticipating any more technology apart from just ordinary signs? Will there be radar on some of the signs?
Sorry, I'm smiling because I love the idea that you think I've got money for that. I am on the light touch here.
You've saved money, obviously.
But that's kind of the money I didn't spend. But the there's nothing in the current plans that say about putting any more. I know I've had some challenge over which poles have got electricity going to them, and they are almost, I checked with the engineers, they're almost all of those poles that have electricity going to them are purely because we're going to have flashing lights on them and you have to make the lights flash with some electricity. So there's no intention that we're putting speed cameras up. There are no speed cameras or ANPR recognition cameras included in any of our current proposals.
Got a note from Craig saying that if you did have radar, you could obviously make money by nicking people.
That would be true, but the money wouldn't come to my department anyway. So the money would go through to, that goes through to Treasury and the Constabulary. It wouldn't come to us. So you get, and I know we talk about siloed government and it's a bad thing, but actually, am I going to spend money that necessarily does that? I'm not interested in nicking people. I'm not interested in the fines. I'm interested in slowing down the speeds and making the roads and our streets where we live nicer places to be.
Okay, Julian. Hello, Julian. You're live with Michelle Hayward.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Michelle.
Oh, hello, Julian.
Hello, hello. Just wanted to say thank you for spending so much extra time at Wednesday's 20-mile-an-hour drop-in session at the sea terminal. You must have been tired after being up on your legs that long through the day.
Do you know, it's not even my legs. I mean, it was a pleasure to stand there and chat to you, but my vocal cords, you can hear it. This is my husky, you know, OnlyFans voice that I've got on today. I'm working on the aspirin and the strepsils to keep going. So the road shows are going to be a bit of a challenge next week with hours of talking to people. But it's part of the job being out there and talking to constituents and to people around the island about what we're doing.
Yeah, and good news about the new bus service. I hope that goes well.
Well, I hope so too. I mean, we pushed the department quite hard to say what are we doing, and we know that we did the consultation. We've got a bus strategy that is coming forward in the autumn, but there was the capacity to start trying to deliver something now. And I can remember from my time being on Ports and Merry Commissioners that we'd long held that we wanted some sort of connection to the west of the island, because otherwise you have the absurdity of, you know, if you're trying to get from Peel to Port Erin, that you have to go into Douglas and come all the way out again. So this is that little shortcut route. It'll serve the people of Foxdale. It'll connect Peel to the airport, which we know airport routes are the popular routes. And I'm hoping that there's a big take up.
Yeah, great. Yeah. I agree with you. I spoke to someone within the Tesco's logistics team yesterday who told me that the 20-mile-an-hour rollout could impact the available number of home delivery slots, with over an hour a day being lost with the lower speeds. This could mean that each van could lose up to 4 deliveries a day, and I think there's about 10 delivery vans on island. So that would imply a loss of 40 home deliveries per day island-wide, which would then indicate around 14,500 home delivery slots would be lost per year unless Tesco's increases the van's fleet and the staffing, which would not only increase pollution, of course, but would inevitably lead to higher prices or delivery charges. And I would imagine this would be hardest on people on Tesco deliveries, people like the elderly, the disabled, people without vehicles, or people who are too busy to have the time to shop. I just wonder if Tesco could clarify how much their delivery capability is likely to be impaired by the 20 rollout. And one would assume a similar problem will hit the home visits by social care, health workers and district nurses. And I think I mentioned yesterday or a couple of days ago that it would be 6,250 home visits lost a year. So my question to you is, have you approached any businesses or social and health care service providers for their impact assessments from the 20 rollout?
Thank you for the very detailed question. I, Julian, what I really admire about you is your ability to start out from one point and then to make those numbers grow and grow. And I think I'm going to go right back to challenging basics. Tesco's have very recently changed their delivery model, so they are working from a local hub. Now, we know that, and I know because I've had some challenges about the range that is in Tesco in Port Erin particularly, because people who are now getting their deliveries from there weren't getting some of the items. And so there's been some very good work and some collaboration between government and Tesco's to pass those messages on and to increase the range that's carried in the Port Erin store so that people are getting the deliveries they want. And that means that most of the deliveries, because that's how Tesco's working, are going to be local deliveries. The average speed through Douglas is 24.6 miles an hour. The speed at peak times through Douglas is 8 or 9 miles an hour. So actually, me changing the speed limits, or you know, the speed limits reducing on some of those residential roads through Douglas, probably make very little difference. And I'd love for the person from Tesco's who's said, I think I'm going to lose an hour a day driving slower, to come and explain, because the difference between driving a mile at 30 miles an hour and driving a mile at 20 an hour is 4 minutes of time. Now, I suspect that most of those vehicles driving around our residential streets with the junctions, with the parked cars, with all the challenges they have, they're probably not doing 30 miles an hour already. So whether the speed limit is 30 or whether it's 20 will make very small difference. We know that there's significant data from elsewhere that shows that traffic speeds very rarely change by more than about 3 or 4%. And so, you know, that's something I'm heartened about. And in some cases, because you actually smooth out and it's not stop start driving at 30 miles an hour because you don't accelerate so fast, that actually traffic flow is smoothed by having 20s. So if you could pass on to me your contact at Tesco's, I'd love to sit down and explore that data with them. But I really think, you know, just taking that and extrapolating it to everyone really probably isn't fair and isn't right.
Okay.
I spoke to somebody at one of the sessions who said that their average speed, and they've timed this, you know, as the roads are at the moment from Ramsey into Douglas, their average speed is 26 miles an hour, and they're doing 65 on the mountain. And then once they get down off the mountain and you get onto the roads in the city, that the speed level drops, and it does. And I think, you know, there's almost overplaying the, you're not driving at 30 on a lot of these roads anyway, so the impact of changing it to 20 is much reduced from what you're predicting.
Okay, final word, Julian.
Well, as a scientist, you'll know that you can't beat physics, Michelle. The stats that are out from all over the world are saying that when you start going to 20 mile an hour, the average speed drops from 24 to 17, and it's not evenly distributed across the day. You have a less effect at peak times, maybe 20% slower, but outside of peak times, like, say, for example, a haulage driver at 5 o'clock in the morning, that's a 50% reduction in what they would normally be driving at. So you've got, you're going to be affecting people. And don't forget, you're including distributor and arterial roads. So you're going to get clogging effects, which aren't included in the stats you're talking about. So, for example, Avondale Road and Main Road Onken, or Colby Road, when all you have to do is look at a tractor in the daytime, the amount of cars that are stuck behind them increases massively, and you're going to have that problem magnified across the place. And from what I'm understanding from Tesco is they have had problems, and what they're doing is they'll handle it, but they'll have to creep the prices up. So what they're saying is the 20 mile an hour zones, you know, it'll be handleable, but it will increase the cost. And likewise with social care, medical visits, you're going to have to find more people in the day, because you can't beat physics. If everybody's driving 33% slower than they were before, more or less, you're going to have to fill the gap. You can only do a certain amount in the day. That's physics.
Okay. All right, Julian, we have to leave it there because we've got lots more things to get to. But as Michelle said, if you want to pass that information on, then I'm sure she'll be happy about that. Daphne in Mackold said, how about filling in some enormous potholes around Mackold? That's a real speed inhibitor. Our roads in the north are disgraceful. Sadly, the government seems to forget that there are roads north of Douglas. If you get rid of the potholes throughout the Isle of Man, then we can travel safely, faster than walking speed. I worry that my little MX5 will fall into one of the potholes. Well, you're well known for your pothole strategy in Port St Mary. What's the story on roads?
So the department has been, over the last couple of years, resurfacing and repairing more roads than we have ever done before. We've a really sensible programme of working through, and there is, I'm not going to pretend that we're managing to get to them all. I'd like to remind everyone of the notify bit on our website, where you can go in and you can report a pothole. There is a rapid response. Some of the potholes that we're called out to, it actually is a bigger job than being able to patch them up, and we do need to do some significant structural work with the roads. And so that becomes a challenge for our budget, as well as the limited workforce we've got. The department now is smaller in headcount than it has been for many years, and so we are working to try and use our resources as best we can. I appreciate the challenges, and I would urge people that if you have potholes you're concerned about, to make sure that they've been reported, not just to assume that somebody else has done it. I did have one of the councillors last night. I was at the Municipal Association, and one of them said to me, well, it's not my job to go out and report potholes. And like, I'd like to sort of suggest to everyone that, you know, that notify bit is there so that everyone can get involved. If you see stuff, if you can report it to us, it's not that we're ignoring it. We are working around a big backlog of stuff to try and do it. I know I've been to the across to England recently, and some of their streets are, you know, infinitely worse than some of ours. And I think it's a challenge for everywhere. We've got an ageing infrastructure, and we need to do our best to try and maintain it, and that's what we're doing.
Okay. Gary in Port St Mary, given the mountain road has a high number of serious RTCs, as you mentioned, what's the justification for there being no speed limit at all on the mountain?
It's a really interesting question, and part of my conversation with the Chief Constable, and I know previous Chief Constables have also recommended that actually what they'd like is an all-island speed limit, and they'd like to cap out speeds. I'm reluctant to do that. It's not that I don't necessarily think that some speed restriction might be a good idea. We've seen from when we put speed restrictions in during COVID and the speed restrictions we put in around TT as well, that they are a really useful tool for cutting accident rates. The mountain is a challenge. On a good day when it's fine and clear, yes, driving the mountain at 80 miles an hour, assuming that there's no other road users in the way that you're going to put at risk, that's completely feasible. When it's a day like today, when you can't see, and I believe it might be closed at the moment anyway because of a diesel spill, but you know, when it's conditions like today, people just need to slow down. And fortunately for us, you know, 95% of people are sensible and they will drive to the conditions. There will always be that small cohort whose anticipation of their talents and the state of the road is greater than their actual ability to drive to those conditions, and they are the challenging ones. Myself, I think, you know, there will become increasing pressure if we're going to seriously look at the deaths that we have on our roads to move in that direction, but it's not something I'm going to tackle now.
Okay, Derek on 134 said, I'm fully behind Michelle and the 20 mile per hour in housing estates, in particular estates like where my daughter is in Mackled, where there are no pavements. And children, the elderly, the disabled have no choice but to walk in the road. But can I ask where there are no pavements in such estates like you see in new estates, a mandate to install speed ramps there? Not everywhere, but where there are no pavements, I'm still worried that people will not slow down to 20 miles per hour without them. That's Derek, and we're going to be back in just a few moments' time with Michelle Haywood, Minister at the Department of Infrastructure.
Spring, a time for new beginnings and nature. This season, why not have a fresh start by switching your savings to Guernsey's Bank Skipton International and watch them grow? Skipton International offers a range of savings accounts, from fixed term to notice and easy access, enabling your savings to bloom for longer. So make this spring one to remember by switching to Skipton International today.
For details of all Skipton International savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
Need quality type 1 stone for your building or contracting job? Then contact Tells with no minimum order for collection or delivery. Call 677-137. Visit Tells Limited in Snugborough or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Skips are what they do.
We're the guys that hire one to you.
Call Tells Skips today.
677-137.
Ride the trams and trains this summer. Get discounted travel with 1, 3, 5 or 7 day Go Explore cards. Visit the Isle of Man's heritage sites with the Go Explore Heritage Card, which includes entry into national heritage sites. And enjoy family days out to Port Erin, Laxey or Ramsey. For timetables and more great destinations, plan your summer adventures now at rail.im.
Isle of Man Railways.
Coming up, we have another winning weekend on Manx Radio, and this time we're giving you the chance to win a place at Stage Ed's Summer Stage School, worth £160. 5 days of singing, dancing and acting for anyone aged between 6 and 18. You'll explore songs from Hamilton, Matilda, Frozen, Heathers and more, with a performance for friends and family at the end of the week. To win, listen out right across the weekend, and as soon as you hear our special question, text your answer to 166 177 and make sure you're listening listening on Monday afternoon to find out if you're the lucky winner. Don't miss your chance to win this weekend with Stage Ed and Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Michelle Haywood is here from the Department of Infrastructure, and so is Ken. Hi, Ken, you're live with Michelle Haywood.
Afternoon. I'd like to ask the Minister, is the work on Edward Pier finished for the Manxman?
To the best of my knowledge, but I can go back and check with officers
right,
and see if there's anything
outstanding. Right, because the problem is, it's supposed to be the flagship getting to the Isle of Man. You get off down a steep gangway in the pouring, I'm always a foot passenger, you go down if it's raining, you get wet going down the steep gangway into the open, then you've got a 10-yard walk into what I think is a temporary walkway.
Ah, yes.
Because last time...
Yeah, I know where you mean now. Yeah. Right, that is still on the work list to be dealt with as far as I know, but I'll go back and check with the Harbours Division to see.
And it just seems strange. It's not a straight walk because there's two bends in it and there's bits of roof missing, or there was. One got put on, but I don't know if there
is. How long has it been like that, Ken?
Oh, since it was built, put, basically.
With the bends in it?
Well, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll go back and check with the Harbours officers and things. I do know that has been mentioned in meetings, but I'll confess to not remembering the timeline for what needs to happen there. But it is on our radar. We're looking at an awful lot of Harbours infrastructure and improvements around Harbours at the moment.
Now, okay. Talking about Harbours, the new sea terminal in Liverpool, is your department totally in charge of it now?
We're in charge of it and we lease it to the steam packet.
Because it was always the Treasury Minister answering questions because he said it hadn't been handed over.
Well, it's leased to the... So it depends on what you're asking questions
right.
about. So the
right.
operational stuff, some of that is managed by the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company within the building
right.
and the baggage handling equipment, etc. And then right. some of
Can
that site is managed by my department.
Can I talk about the Manxman going there then, in case he's closed for it's bad weather? How many times can the Manxman go with freight to that facility?
You've got me there. I think there was some limit placed on it, but actually there was an override on that if it was in an emergency, then we could extend that number. And I think they were just concerned about the impact of having too much freight sitting around in that particular location. So I believe that in an operational sense, you know, if we were really, really stuck at Heysham, that we would be able to invoke those clauses and we would be able to increase the frequency into Liverpool.
Okay.
But there is limited freight storage.
All
there.
Right. Kent, good to hear from you. Thanks for being with us today and we'll keep our eye on what's happening at the pier. And Howard's with us. Hi, Howard. You're live with Michelle Haywood.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Michelle.
Hello.
Just a curio, and it's going to go on forever here, basically. The promenade, excuse me, the promenade. We're about 3 years down the line now, and the promenade is starting to fall asunder. Where they put ramps in to come up onto at the Villiers end, they're sinking and falling apart. A large number of the zebra crossings and pseudo zebra crossings, and I noticed there was a hole in the red concrete over on the Queen's Promenade end. Now this is on, and yesterday we went along and they were digging up part of the pavement outside the Gaiety Theatre. There was excavators there and barriers, but this is only about 3 years down the line on a major project conducted by the Manx government. What recompense is there from the contractors? Because if you buy a house, you've got a home builder's guarantee of about 10 years. We're only 3 years down the line here on a 30-odd million pound project.
Okay, so I believe that most civil engineering projects, it's usually a year for dealing with any faults that become apparent. I think there are, depending on what the contract says, there are some things that run slightly longer time frame than that. We are aware of a number of, I'm going to say settlement issues, but I noticed the crossings this morning that actually where the block work had gone in, a couple of those had sunk away from the sides and things, and I'll be logging those on the little Notify app in due course, but I'm guessing my highways officers are probably pretty aware of them. I too went past the Villa Gaiety this morning and noticed that there was work ongoing there. So we're obviously, department's aware of it and trying to start addressing some of these problems. But I suspect we're probably beyond where the contractor is liable for any of this at the moment, and it will become part of our maintenance programme to deal with issues.
Do you think overall they made a good job of the prom?
My personal perspective is I don't particularly like the design of the prom. I think if you're going to do a shared space kind of concept, you probably needed to push it harder and faster than you did. And we've kind of ended up with a sort of halfway house on some of it. I think there's some particular challenges. I was down at the horse trams this morning having a visit down there. That's like five lanes of traffic wide and there's no crossings for ages and ages. So, something had to happen, and I think part of the work that we're doing around the proposals perhaps to extend the 20 mile along there starts to create that waterfront, the same as we see waterfronts in other cities, that those waterfronts are about people and about outside space and about being able to, and it's only really access for vehicles that need to get in there, and reclaiming that waterfront is a thing that we see in lots of cities around the UK.
Okay,
we've got a traffic problem on the promenade where everyone's slowing down. The 20 mile an hour is not going to make it any better. But the walkway is more than sufficient for what you need at the present moment. And to make the roadway narrower again, well, it's just going to become a B road.
I wasn't suggesting we're going to make the road narrower. I think actually what we're missing down the end is that we haven't thought about how the people who live along that end of the prom access the beach that's in front of them, because we've put five lanes of traffic that almost act as a barrier, and I think the crossing points there are quite sparse, and perhaps we can do something a little bit better. Okay. That allows people to move around our streets better.
Okay, all right, we have to leave it there, Howard, because I've got lots of questions to get through. And Stuart, you just mentioned the horse trams, and Stuart just said, will this be the Department of Infrastructure Minister who actually gets the horse trams to the sea terminal?
Oh, Stuart. Yes. So my plan at the moment is I've asked for the horse trams plans to be pulled back out of they've been slightly mothballed. We're going back through those. We're checking whether they're fit for purpose, and we are currently in progress of making the business case. I'm aware that the horse trams are 150 years old next year. I was down there visiting this morning. I've seen some of the original, the number two tram. It's one of the very original ones from when it opened 150 years. And that's an amazing piece of history. And I think we have, my take on it always has been that, as politicians, we are just temporary guardians of the island and its heritage. And we have a responsibility to make sure that we maintain some of these things. Okay. So my intention is to bring it back and ask for funding.
Stuart's little PS was, I got the experience, says Stuart, that somewhere in the background in the department, somebody didn't want the horse trams, which I thought was fairly spiteful because, as you said, the horse trams are the Isle of Man's. They're not the department. They're not the politicians. They've been there, as you say, for 150 years.
Yeah, and I think in these times when we are charged with looking very carefully at our budgets and what we spend, and we're looking for efficiencies, if I sit and try and make a business case for the horse trams based on, and if I extend them along to the sea terminal, how much money extra am I going to make, and does that fund it? The answer's probably no, to be fair. But if I think with my heart, and if I think with my heritage and responsibility kind of head instead, then actually it starts to become one of those that I do feel that we have a responsibility to do this, and I am willing to step forward and to champion seeing if we can get that problem sorted out.
Okay, with Michelle Haywood in just a few moments' time.
Hi Liz, I see you've had your garage converted. We're desperate for more room.
Yes, come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Discover a fabulous range of watches, gifts and jewellery at Ramsey Art Gallery, with top brand watches from Bulova,
Citizen Eco Drive and Storm to Acura, Seconda and Timex. Plus, all watch purchases come with free lifetime watch bracelet adjustment service. There's stunning gold and silver jewellery, gifts for all occasions, and of course a fabulous gallery of limited edition prints and original artworks. Find all this and more at Ramsey Art Gallery, Jewellers and Engravers, opposite Ramsey RNLI shop.
Would you consider leaving a gift in your will to Hospice Isle of Man? As a charity, we need to raise millions every year just to continue providing our services. Your support means that we can give our care to all those who need it, when they need it, completely free of charge. If you're considering making a will or adding a hospice donation to your will, please give us a call to find out more on 672222. Every penny raised makes a huge difference to every individual and family who needs us. Thank you.
Enjoy a fabulous getaway right on your doorstep at Trail Lodge Ballasalla. With fabulous boutique accommodation at beautiful Silverdale Glen. Perfect for couples and small or large groups. From luxurious Egyptian cotton sheets, wet rooms and flat screen TVs to total immersion in the stunning surrounds of Silverdale Glen. Trail Lodge Ballasalla has something for everyone, whether total relaxation or exhilarating adventures. Plus, we have brand new self-contained luxury lodges coming this year. Visit traillodge.im to find out more.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Michelle Haywood, MHK, from the Department of Infrastructure. The Minister is on, and so is John. Hi, John.
Hi. I'd just like to ask the Minister one particular question. For instance, the roads around Douglas, one example, Woodburn Road. It's getting worse by the week. Nothing is done. I could take you to a road in Ramsey where you'd be very brave to do more than 10 mile an hour. It's got so bad. And yet in Onken, up here in Onken, Birch Hill area, cul-de-sacs surfaced beautifully with tarmac. A cul-de-sac, totally unnecessary. Why? I mean, it must have cost thousands, because I've got a good idea how much a load of tarmac costs. And yet they ignore the roads, which are thoroughfares, if you like, and yet a cul-de-sac gets done immaculately. Okay. I just can't understand it.
So, Michelle, they were priorities. Who sets them?
So the highways team have a whole grid of everything that gets reported in, and they're managing. In fact, they're moving to a new system to allow them to put extra information on that. So it is true. I mean, some of these things, some of these projects that are coming to fruition now will have been planned for 2 or 3 years. And so they'll have been highlighted for whatever reasons. And without knowing the individual roads and looking at that scoring matrix, I couldn't say why. I know that on some of the bigger roads, we have particular challenges around them in terms of it's not necessarily just a resurfacing job, it's a reconstruction, and so that moves us into a different set of budget and a different set of prioritisation.
So the cost of something can affect whether it's done quickly or not.
It can. We have to work within our budgets. I'm really proud this year my department has come in on budget and we've delivered as much as we've managed to deliver. It can, because we can get towards the end of a year, and if there's only a small amount left in the pot, rather than doing whatever's top of the list, we'll do what costs that amount of money, because that holds us in budget.
Okay, all right, John, thank you. We've got to dash on, because I've got several more questions, including one from Judith, who just said, can you ask Dr. Haywood what's happening regarding the culvert near the entrance to Stony Mountain Quarry? I think Judith has emailed you. The culvert blocks several times a year and overflows in heavy rain, causing the road to flood. Not standing water, but there's a river in full flow. I used to clear the culvert myself, but due to advancing age and ill health, I can't do this. So is there any? Are you aware of this culvert at Stony Mountain Quarry?
I am. Thank you, Judith, for coming in. All the messages that you've sent through have gone through to the floods team, and I believe they have been up there to have a look, and they have. I thought they had checked it out, but I will go back and I will just double check with them about what work's been done. Sometimes the flood team work in mysterious ways underground and you can't quite see what they're doing. So I'll go away and I'll make sure to check out and that. Okay. And I've got your email, so I can I'll drop your message back and just update you.
Okay, thank you, Judith. And so we come to the airport. What's the current state of play regarding air traffic controllers? How many do we have?
The air traffic controllers, I believe we're up to I think are we too short of what we predict as the full complement? But because we have so many that are under training and things at the moment, we don't have any capacity to train anymore. So even if we recruited experienced air traffic controllers, we'd still need to train them up and working on the Isle of Man. So the airport board has been really strategic about working our way back from what was a bit of a hole, to be fair. We've changed so that we've reduced the number of breaks where the air traffic controls services is shut down for a short period, and that number of breaks will carry on reducing as we get more people qualified and as we step up. We've changed how the rotor works recently as well, so we're working with the air traffic controllers to do as much as we can and to deliver the best service.
Okay, a message also, and this is from Sam Samantha, who says, have you got a breakdown of how much money the car park takes and how much of it goes to the app company?
I don't have that breakdown. I do know that we're planning to change away. I know that the app hasn't been universally popular. In fact, I don't think it's even popular with my fellow ministers, because you can't put the Ringo app on a government issued phone, it turns out. So even ministers, when they go down there to fly away, often a government business can't actually pay for their parking from their phone. So there is a business case in currently, and we are looking to change how parking works down there. I don't have the breakdown with me though.
Okay, and also this was just a further one regarding air traffic controllers. Do you think that the lack of air traffic controllers and the windows which aeroplanes could land affected the amount of airlines that are coming to the Isle of Man?
I think there are a number of challenges for airlines coming to the Isle of Man. I don't think that those airlines have publicised slots into, even if you go to a big airport like Gatwick, you have a slot that you're meant to arrive in, and it's all about the schedule. And I think what happens here is that we publicise our short closures well in advance, and sometimes what happens three legs back in the journey where bags don't get loaded in time means that, you know, the airline misses its slot. We are working to close those slots down so that it will be open as much as we need to.
Okay, here's a question from Hugh. Could you ask Michelle Haywood, are you happy you took the job?
Oh, every day is a delight, Andy. Every day is a delight.
Not long until the election next year, September. Have you made any decision on September 2026?
I always said my intention was to not necessarily just stand for one term, but stand for a second, but to serve the first term with bravery and courage and to make the decisions that needed to be made and not with an eye on the next election. So I'm not thinking that far ahead yet. I'm trying to get on and work with integrity, with honesty, and to deliver as much as I can while I'm here.
OK, Michelle Haywood will be... are you at all of the sessions next week, by the way?
Oh, yes.
Okay. That's it. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
And thanks to Chris on the phones.
WIN